This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack
and Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, why the next big branding craze might be on the top of your morning coffee.
Plus, how to safely send back your new Samsung Note 7.
Also on the show, a futuristic new motorcycle from BMW that could mean the end to helmets.
That makes me very nervous. And why Hungry Harvest is launching emojis to get us to buy more ugly food.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
So, Amber, what are people talking about?
Well, first of all, we should say hello to Aaron because, he's been here for a few weeks, but every once in a while he takes off for these long vacations.
And he doesn't respond. He doesn't send us messages. He never says he misses us.
Hi, guys. I'm right here, and I miss you when I'm gone.
Oh, isn't that a song?
Yeah.
Sure. I'm gonna miss you when I'm gone. I'm gonna miss you when I'm gone. No?
Okay. Right. So, speaking of going places, our first story is about President Obama not leaving the White House, but instead encouraging a journey to Mars. It's a kind of an interesting news headline. President Obama released an op-ed on CNN praising the accomplishments of NASA to date and encouraging the nation to keep its sights set on Mars. Try to say that really quickly. It's not the easiest. Nonetheless, he is talking about the desire to get to Mars by the 2030s. Some exciting news. And I know if there's a space cadet in the room, and I say that with all respect, all due respect, it's Michael Bancroft.
That's like the worst thing imaginable. Yes, I am. Actually, in fairness, I'm both.
Yes,
a little space cadet on both meanings, let's be honest. Well, depending on the time of day.
You're
I can't be a space cadet, and I'm interested in space.
Well, you're smart, but you're also fun.
Sometimes I forget, useful, smart things. No, this is really interesting. So the idea behind this is, and yes, there is a political angle in this, because obviously the current administration is very heavily into investing in innovation and space exploration, and obviously the other side of the aisle is wanting to shut it down because they believe that the amount of money being spent is not the best way of spending the money. Now, take away the politics. What is really cool about this is people are still interested in ensuring that there is investment in technology and innovation and trying to explore outside of our everyday lives. And I think that's important because if people don't put money into these things, we would never go to the moon. We would never, have the idea of having private companies take us to the moon with Elon Musk and all those kinds of people. So I just think it's very important. It's more that and the idea of exploring space and actually building these products rather than the political side of things.
See, Aaron, I told you that Michael is a space cadet. He loves stories about space.
You're right.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk about Tribe's voice recognition video chat technology that could make Snapchat and Facebook Messenger look outdated. Tribe's one-touch video walkie-talkie app launched a huge update on iOS and Android, powered by access to some unreleased Google Voice APIs. So this does work like a walkie-talkie where you simply hold down to talk to a friend. I love this idea. There have been apps like this out in the past, but I think the walkie-talkie version of messaging and speaking makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it really does. So the whole point here is it's still video first, but it's adding text options as well, just in case you need to send someone something they'll want to copy and paste, like a phone number or address, but there really is that emphasis on video and then adding in that whole experience overall.
And I think, too, when we talk about walkie-talkies, I mean, it's such simple technology. In fact, if you look back to the old-school Blackberries, they had walkie-talkies. Talkie type technology built into them. You would press down and be able to talk to people who had the Manberry, as many people called it. But Aaron, do you walkie-talkie with your son?
No, but I'd like to.
I meant just walking down the street and talking.
Yes, walking and talking in the old school analog sense. Yes, I do both of those.
I have to tell you, Aaron, not that I'm giving you parental advice, but because our boys are the same age, that buying them walkie-talkies, even just around the house, is their favorite thing in the world. It's so
really
much fun.
Cool. I was over at Amber's house, and Connor and her husband, Chris, they were using the walkie-talkies, and I was so jealous. I wanted to have her turn. It was really fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So don't deprive your kid anymore, man.
Yeah, come on, Aaron. Get with the program. I'm just curious, though. I'm just wondering if with the Tribes app, will these features be enough to pull people away from the other messaging apps like Facebook, Messenger, Snapchat, and iMessage? Will it be enough? Because it seems like there's a lot of people in this space, and they have to almost one-up each other to be able to get new users over to them.
Well, I think too often in tech and social media, we're trying to pit companies against each other. But again, I go back to this idea that many of these apps can exist, even if their communities aren't as big as Snapchat. If you look at some of the stats, they already have 500,000 downloads since it was founded in 2015, and they have about 40,000 daily users. If they,
they're doing okay.
Yeah, they're doing okay. But imagine if they figured out some way to monetize by, I don't know, you know, adding features that allow you to do walkie-talkie-like conversations and, you know, put little virtual hats on. People pay for stickers and those type of things, right?
Yeah.
So
virtual hats.
Yeah, virtual hats.
And stickers.
Okay, so maybe I shouldn't be in charge of development schedule for that one.
I think you should be. I think they're genius. Okay, speaking of genius, BMW envisions a future where two-wheel vehicles have enough onboard intelligence to make it possible for drivers to use them without protective clothing. What do I mean by this? If anybody has seen this futuristic motorcycle that BMW is proposing, now obviously it's a prototype, it's all kind of circumstantial and based on a whole bunch, but it is the most beautiful design, and the innovations and the technologies that they want to build into it. It is absolutely astounding. Now it's called Motorrad. Is that how I would pronounce
it? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Vision Next 100. Now, the vehicle is one in the series of BMW concepts that aim to anticipate where its future vision is going and how they're incorporating the technologies and connectivity with the features. And it will really, really change the experience, and it will be making it safer. And the actual motorcycle itself will take all of the data, and it will make it safer, so it'll be able to stand up by itself. It'll be able to prevent stuff. It's like, it's absolutely amazing.
And we should say, they're not saying get rid of helmets altogether. I mean, that is never a good piece of advice, but there will be headgear involved. And although the traditional helmet is gone, it will be like a lightweight visor. So there will be protection, but just more futuristic protection, if I can call it that, in the sense that they've done a lot of innovation to be able to come up with this. It's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's something you would see out of a Mission Impossible movie, if I can speak in Michael Bancroft's terms.
It is something you would see in Mission Impossible. And I just love the idea that they want to do self-balancing system that absolutely prevents the possibility of the entire thing tipping over. So I would be able to use a motorcycle finally.
Super cool.
Super cool. When we return, how to see up close and far away at the same time with a new pair of contact lenses.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. With more screens in our lives, we're starting to notice that as we age, it's getting harder to see close up. Whether you're looking at a smartphone or a smartwatch, if it's blurry, we learn about the latest eye technology with the help of Dr. Michael Kaplan. Hi there.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. I should say that we know each other, just for full disclosure, because yesterday I did an eye test with you, and we were talking about what happens to the eye as it ages. So let's start there. What does happen over the years with the health of your eyes?
What happens is that as you get older, when you reach the age of about 40, 45, your ability to focus close up starts to diminish. And so the first thing that we start to see is that your arms are getting too short. You're having difficulty maybe reading a menu in a dark restaurant, or having difficulty reading your scorecard while you're playing golf. And these are all things that occur as you get older. It's what we call presbyopia.
And so I'm curious, though, I know you say that that's what happens when you get to 40 or 45, but I have to admit, when I was in my 20s, I was having a little bit of a problem seeing as well. Is that natural to have kind of it a little bit earlier, these kinds of problems?
No, so you probably were experiencing something quite different. Presbyopia really only occurs around about the age of 40, 45. There are other things that can cause problems with vision, and that's being nearsighted or being farsighted or astigmatism. And so each one of those things has a different visual issue.
And so I'm just curious too, now that we have so many screens in our lives and we're constantly reading on laptops and smartphones and smartwatches, has that actually kind of assisted in deterioration of the health of people's eyes?
Well, there is some studies that now show that the light that is emitted from these screens can cause problems with the back of the eye. However, they do not have any impact on presbyopia in itself. Presbyopia is just typically an aging process. What happens is that the lens inside of the eye becomes a little bit harder, and so the focusing ability of that eye starts to diminish.
Now, can we talk a little bit about some of the symptoms of presbyopia? Because I imagine there are people right now who are perhaps driving and can see far away but can't see close up, or like Michael and I just were talking about, have issues with seeing their screen close up. So if we know that this is something that we can't avoid once we get to a certain age, can you talk about what are some of the symptoms in terms of knowing that, hey, it's time to go get your eyes tested?
So, as I said before, one of the most common things is that you feel like your arms are getting too short. But for those that are out there driving in their car, they'd be able to see out in the distance quite clearly. But if you looked at your dash, you may have difficulty seeing the dash or seeing your GPS. That may be a symptom of presbyopia.
I'm curious, how often should people get their eyes tested anyway?
Well, we recommend yearly eye examinations because not only are we looking for visual problems, but we're also looking to make sure that the eyes are healthy and also that the rest of the body is healthy as well.
Let's talk about some of
the eye exams.
Some of the innovations when it comes to helping with these issues. And I should say during our eye test yesterday that you said that I had beautiful eyes. I don't think you meant the look of the eyes, but my actual eyeballs. So that was quite an experience for me.
Yeah, what I was really referring to is the retina, the back of the eye. The retina is actually the only place in the body where we can actually see blood vessels without cutting the body open. So everything is in its natural position, and so we can see the vessels and see the health of the vessels, which tells us a lot about the health of the rest of the body.
Now, there's a lot of stigma for people out there who can't see close up if they're looking at electronics or, like you said, trying to see their dashboard in the car, and they have to wear reading glasses to see close up. But once you start to buy reading glasses, I mean, you get into this mental space where I think people feel really old. And I know that there's a way around this with some new technology that I think a lot of people don't really know about. Can you explain how that works?
Sure can. And as you said, you know, when you put on those glasses, not only do you look old, but you actually feel old. And we can really help you with that. So there's a new technology. It's a contact lens made by Alcon called Dailies Total One Multifocal Contact Lenses. And what this is actually a multifocal contact lens which marries two different technologies, the technology of water gradients technology and the precision profile design, which is an excellent design in helping us being able to see both in the distance, intermediate, and as well as near seamlessly. And so these contact lenses will enable us to see at all these distances and be very, very comfortable as we wear these contact lenses.
I've never heard Amber be referred to as having extremely beautiful retinas. That's what I'm going to tell everybody that from now on. She's like, she's got beautiful retinas. That was the best thing I've learned today. So I'm just curious. So you've seen an evolution in technologies for assisting in the health of the eyes. Where do you see it developing further as we go ahead?
In terms of technologies?
Yeah, in terms of the technologies, because you just explained that the one with the new the lenses that they could use instead of glasses. Is there further developments that you can see that to help with people's the health of their eyes?
Certainly, with new designs of materials, we're getting the materials that give us more and more oxygen. They're more and more compatible with the biology of the eyes. So we're certainly seeing that as a big step forward. There are other technologies that are coming up that will have smart chips in the actual contact lenses, which will help us get information about the body. Those are still in their infancy at the moment, but that's something that we can certainly look down the line for.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kaplan. And if people want more information, can you let us know the website where they can go?
So the website for the multifocal contact lenses is loseyourreaders.ca, and you can get a lot of information there about these multifocal contact lenses and about presbyopia as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I should say I do not have presbyopia, but I feel for people who do, and I'm glad that we have this technology. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Up next, a new events app that could help up to 100 million people a day plan parties. You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Fantastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to look at some new and trending apps. Facebook is giving its most outgoing users a dedicated app for browsing and searching for stuff going on nearby. The Facebook Events app has the ability to pull in calendars from your phone so that you can see all of your plans in one place so that people know when you're free. It's available for iOS right now, and I believe it's just available in the U.S., and a lot of people
excited
Android
about this. I think Android is coming.
They always say that about Android. Android's coming down the road.
It's not great. I wonder why no one ever just launches Android first.
Well, they're doing it more and more, but you're right. I mean, Android is oftentimes the ugly stepsister of the iPhone.
It's very sad.
I always go for those outlying things.
You do.
That's why I'm using Android right now.
it's like I feel bad for them, so I'm going to use them first. I'm going to help lift them up.
Lift them up, Michael. Lift them up. Anyway, let's get back to Facebook and this app. So we know that people use Facebook a lot for events as it is. So I like the idea that it's a standalone app, and I think they'll do well. I mean, I didn't realize how many people actually use the events planning app in Facebook right now, or the feature within Facebook.
Yeah, I had never ever used it, and I know that I get alerts and requests to go, but I would never
answer them.
I don't answer them. It's like, is this the thing where it pops up and it's like, yes, no, maybe?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's annoying.
Okay, Aaron. But Aaron, you must have friends. I have so many friends who... I'm sorry. No offense. No offense. No offense to Michael. Oh, wow. Michael has already scolded me and said I need to get better at my inside thoughts coming out.
That was amazing. Okay, so Aaron, with your friends on Facebook, do you use this and do you find it useful?
I do use Facebook events. I do find it useful, and I find it useful for information on the event, such as if tickets aren't at the door, what's the site to buy tickets? If there's an opening act and a headline act, what time are they going to be? I don't know if I'd like...
What about personally, would you?
Yeah.
Like your own party or stuff?
Yeah, sure. I would use it for my own party. I don't know if I'd like the Facebook events app pulls in calendars from your phone so you can see all your plans in one place so you know you're free. How much does that show to other people? Because I know Facebook is all about the settings of what you show to other people. The settings can be very arcane, and sometimes it's hard to figure out the setting you want. So if you use this app and it's pulling in my personal calendar, my G calendar, my Apple calendar, my iCloud, can other people
see?
He's so
hip. Did you hear that?
I know.
His G calendar.
I don't, you know what?
Can other people see when I'm free, when I'm occupied, and then they know that if I declined their event, I was actually free at the time?
I don't think they can. I think the way we introduced it maybe sounded like they could, but it's more for you to be able to see if you're available. So
all in one place, bringing all that stuff. It's more trying to make it better for you.
Yeah, as someone who's invited to an event or to manage events, but yeah, you can't go and start snooping in people's calendars. I don't think.
It is Facebook, are you sure? People still don't know all the settings.
Well, there's probably a back door that you can do.
You will find it and be like, oh, they lied to me.
I know. Aaron, have you ever had a party and not invited us? Tell the truth.
So you know, we've been doing this show for, a year and a half, and you've never invited us ever.
I don't think I've had a party in a year and a half. Well, but hold on. We've had, like, Halloween parties and stuff, but Amber lives in another part of the city that you need a passport to get from her part of the city to my part.
Oh, hello.
You need sometimes to book a flight or something, so it's very difficult.
And I don't go anywhere unless she picks me up and takes me.
Well, you're in the middle of us, really.
Yeah. Although I also never go anywhere unless Amber picks me up and drops me back.
I do have Netflix, so you can come over sometime and watch it.
I love Netflix. See? Oh, it's the best. Okay, Hungry Harvest is a startup service that delivers... I have very excited about this one. So it's a little bit weird, but at the same time, it's kind of doing good because it's ugly produce. And so what it's trying to do is it wants you to recover produce to consumers' doorsteps. They're trying to bring this so that the ugly produce doesn't get thrown away, that it gets used and it's not wasted. So I really like this app. So what the app is doing, it gives every user a package of new emoji, a series of ugly fruit and vegetable emoji meant to get people thinking and typing about our preoccupation with aesthetically pleasing food.
I think this is really neat. You know, I don't know what grocery store it was, and I don't want to mention the name just in case I get it wrong,
right.
But there was a grocery chain not that long ago that said that they were going to put at least fruit and vegetables, I think, that were not perfectly shaped out on the shelves, potentially at a reduced price, because they do realize that they're wasting so much food by not putting these out, because everybody wants the perfectly shaped peppers and the perfectly shaped carrots, but there's a lot of these poor little vegetables and fruit that are
and
so
pretty. And they're just as good and healthy, and there's nothing wrong with them. Like if there's like a little spot or something like that on them, people will just cast them aside.
This is the theme for the show.
It is.
Take care of the people who've been rejected.
Can anybody tell that there has been some rejection in our past lives before?
Michael and I are having an on-air reconciliation.
So this app is really neat. So you basically, and there's some facts too. It's like 1 in 5 fruits and vegetables go to waste every year, often due to aesthetic and logistical reasons, which I thought was interesting because as I said, the startup behind this app, Hungry Harvest, they actually are there to try and ensure that all of this produce does get actually used. And I just thought that was fascinating. 1 in 5, that are not good odds for those fruits and veggies.
Yeah, it's really sad for them. Anyway,
anyways, download the app, use the emojis, and get the word out about the ugly fruit.
I think this is really quite interesting. Despite us sort of giggling about it, I think this is a clever way to highlight the issue with food waste. Okay, let's move on.
Now, we didn't ask Aaron what fruit he would be if he was an ugly fruit. Sorry, let's move on.
A bruised apple.
Aww. Don't say I'm a pear. Okay, let's keep going. So, Michael's even horrified by my reaction.
I know, I'm like, don't even put it out there.
It's kind of funny. I know, I told you, inside
voice. I know.
Okay, so I should not be reading this app because this is really about Michael. And he's making me do this because it's his favorite airline in the entire world. And it, of course, is Qantas. And Qantas has a new app that will tell its pilots the most fuel-efficient way to fly around the world. Now, I would have hoped they had that already, but apparently it's a new thing.
No, okay, so it's to try and cut the amount of fuel that they use. Okay, so if you think about it, I don't think any airline has that. What the idea is, it's putting the app in the pilot's hands, and it's trying to get them the most fuel efficient way. Whereas I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, so I'm sure if there's like flying enthusiasts out there, but it's usually like you have to plot your path and put it in with the tower, and it's not more about like the best way to fuel efficiency. It's more just about like
not running into planes.
Correct. It's like whatever path is available at the time of day that you're flying that will get you there on time ish.
So this is interesting. I don't know enough about this, but I will say one thing, is that obviously they're using data in a really interesting way to further save money. So
in partnership with GE, who makes their engines.
So I'm sure, I mean, there's a lot of very intelligent people who are behind this. And I think from a business perspective, this makes a ton of sense for the company. And I'm sure because Qantas is one of the safest airlines in the world, if not the safest, they've also thought about the safety of the passengers, because I wouldn't want them to cut corners to save fuel to potentially jeopardize the safety of the passengers. But if anyone's going to do it, Qantas is one of those airlines that's never had a fatality from a crash.
And they're also one of the most innovative airlines when it comes to technologies, what they use for their passengers and for their business that I've seen. Because I remember when I went home once and they already have smart chips in their cards where I can just swipe and I'm already logged in and done. All the suitcases get tracked with their bag tags. There's iPads on the plane, and that's customized with content. Like, it's absolutely amazing. And no, I am not paid in any way, shape, or form from Qantas.
But they were featured in Rain Man, which is why I know the safety stat.
Qantas never crashes. Qantas. Now, if you've got an app you'd like us to check out, tweet us at Amber Mac and at MBancroft80, and please use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, how to print your favorite photo on your next cup of Java.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Wishlist.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. We absolutely love caffeine and, well, social media too. Now we can combine the two for a truly personal and customized coffee experience. Amber, I have found a machine that can print our picture on top of our lattes.
Woohoo!
Isn't that the best news you've ever heard in your entire life?
It's up there, top three.
So the man behind this is Yossi Meshulam. Now, he is the CEO of Ripples, and he's joining us now. We're very excited to have you. How are you doing?
Hi there. Hi, Michael. Hi, Amber. Thank you very much. Good to be here. I'm great. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. And for people who are curious about this, because we have seen images of these photos being printed on the top of lattes, but take us back to the beginning of this idea. Who comes up with something this amazing and insane at the same time?
Sure. So the idea came with two of my co-founding members, both of them industrial designers, both of them love coffee like you. Sitting in a lot of coffee shops, and when their coffee was served, they just saw a blank canvas in front of them. Blank canvas that was an opportunity, and they thought, wouldn't it be cool to use that canvas to communicate and engage with coffee lovers across the world? So this is how it all came about. Before Ripples, we got used to beautiful heart shapes and leaves and rosé designs. And with Ripples, we are augmenting those designs with digital content. So that's how it all started.
And so what's involved in the process? So there's a coffee machine maker, and there's also an app. And I use both of these to make the perfect cup of coffee with my picture.
Yes, that's exactly the process. So you prepare coffee, and the coffee is typically, we prepare coffee either with an automated machine, a barista, and after the coffee is prepared and there is a nice layer of foam on top of it, you put it under the ripple maker, and then you select content. And the content is usually selected by the barista, unless really, as you mentioned, Michael, consumer comes in with the app, and then they can decide what they want to have on their cup of coffee. They can, of course, give a nice cup of coffee with a unique message to their partner coming to drink coffee with them. And the whole concept is that it's a content platform. So we make sure that there are always new and exciting designs on the machine so consumers can enjoy something new each time they come and have their cup of coffee.
And so through the app, I as a user, I can upload my own images through the app and then send that to the coffee the coffee shop. Is that how that works?
Yes, exactly. So the app allows you to upload content from your phone. You can take a picture on the spot or just take an existing picture from your library. And you can edit it a little bit, because we have a round canvas. So, we help you to choose which part of your photo you want to be on your cup of coffee. And then you send it to the coffee shop. You get, before you actually confirm, you get a list of all the coffee shops in your vicinity where Ripple Maker exists. You select the one that you would like to have your coffee in or you're already in. And then the image will be sent to the Ripple Maker and give you a confirmation code back. The next thing you need to do when you order your coffee is just tell what is the Ripple number that you have ordered or you created for yourself for your cup of coffee. That's how we make it.
Now, if I'm correct with
the right image.
if I'm correct with the price of this machine, it sells for about $1,000, and there's a monthly subscription that starts at about $85. So my next question for you is, why is this not everywhere? When is it going to be in Starbucks, in my home? How are you rolling things out?
I think that that it will be everywhere. We just started selling a couple of months ago. We currently have hundreds of machines deployed, and mostly in the U.S., by the way. So it is going to be everywhere. We deliberately, as you said, Amber, we deliberately priced it to be affordable. We want it to be everywhere. We want to make people happy every day when they get their morning cup of coffee.
And so I believe that the subscription, that's for the coffee extracts. What about from a health perspective? I believe there's no sugar, preservatives.
Right, exactly. So the coffee extract that we deliver is an extract that doesn't have any preservative or sugar in it. It was very important for us since coffee lovers are very particular about their cup of coffee. They don't want us to add any taste or aroma to their cup of coffee. We also add a very small layer on top of the foam, so it's really not noticeable in any way. And the subscription is basically to deliver to the shop the amount of coffee that they need in order to deliver that to their customers. The subscription also includes all the content services. So what it means is we have a team of content creators and designers that keep uploading content into our customers' Ripple makers. So each morning when they come, they have something new to give to their customers.
This is like an Instagram dream come true.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. We see those cups of coffee everywhere, and we love it. We follow all of our customers, and we're always so happy to see when their customers are uploading what they receive, and they are tagging them, and they're sending it to their friends. And this is how we share happiness. You know, if you get a very inspiring good morning quote on your cup of coffee, and it really made your day, the first thing you want to do is you want to picture it, you want to upload it, you want to share it with your friends, and you share the happiness. So that's what makes us most happy is when we look at our customers and we see what consumers are doing with it.
So just for people who want
a lot of joy.
Absolutely, I think it's fantastic. And for people who want to see some of these images, what is the hashtag that they should look up on social media?
It's hashtag coffee ripple.
Fantastic.
One word.
And I know you can go to coffeeripples.com as well to get more information. Well, thank you so much for joining us from Tel Aviv, and congratulations on everything that you've done, and we can't wait to try it out.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Up next, three theories behind why Samsung Note 7 is heating up. You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Power Friend.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Even after two recalls, nearly 100 instances of dangerous overheating and Samsung's specific instructions to shut them off because they might catch fire, some people just won't relinquish their Galaxy Note 7 smartphone. Our favorite international tech expert, Michael Josh, is with us for a look at the future of Samsung now that these smartphones are on fire.
Oh,
hi, Michael. What's going on?
Hi, Michael. Sing the whole line. Hi, Amber.
Hey there. Thank you for joining us. I will have to ask you, since you are a favorite international tech expert, where you are right now.
Oh, I'm home in Manila right now.
Nice.
And it took a few days off, but I'm back on the beat, and there's a lot to cover. It's not necessarily good news, but I think it's something that we really need to discuss. Samsung launched the Note 7 in New York on August 2nd. We were there. We covered it. We reported on it. And I think it's just right that we talk about it right now. I kind of agree, Michael, with those people who I can understand why they want to hold on to their Note 7. To be completely honest, I know it's not the best thing to do, but I actually have mine open right now as well.
It could explode.
And, it'll take. I know it's scary. But it's scary. I had to leave the house earlier. I left it behind. I turned it off and I left it somewhere safe just in case something would happen. Although, you know, those ever since they recalled their phones, there's only been about, not a lot, but at least 20, still a lot, 23 cases. But considering how many they've sold, those are still kind of isolated. But, you know, it could be you. But at the same time, it's such a great phone, and I'm kind of still holding on to it, although I know I have to give it back. And please don't follow my lead. Turn it off right now and return it as soon as possible.
So let's talk a little bit about this news, because I think, you know, we are all Samsung fans on the phone, and we agree that this was one of the most beautiful devices that has come out in the past couple of years. It's really a sad story for Samsung, I think, because they had built up so much momentum. Do you see it that way?
I definitely agree. Just for everyone's reference, the phone is only 2 months old. It was launched in August. At the end of August, there was the first case reported in Korea, and then close to 100 other cases were reported. September 2, after its first month, Samsung issued their recall. 2 weeks later, they started replacing phones. And then last week, there were several incidents, including one on board a Southwest flight while it was boarding, thankfully not while it was in the air. And then October 10, Samsung put it stopped sales and exchanges. Basically, it's killed the Note 7. And I really feel bad about it because I really feel bad for Samsung because it seems to be, you know, after several hits and misses, they've finally done it right. They came out with a phone when the phone, and this is not just you and me speaking, when they announced the Note 7, tech journalists from the all around the world were quick to hail it as one of the best phones ever. And I have to agree, you know, they kind of found the perfect balance between style and function. It had all the features you would want, great camera, beautiful, beautiful design. And I know they wanted to come out early because they knew the iPhone 7 was coming, and they knew, they heard that it wasn't going to be as spectacular. So that was really an opportunity for them to kind of shine and really sell a lot of phones. And if you base number of phones sold and the pre-orders, then it was actually doing really, really well.
So let's talk as well. There have been reports over the past couple days that say that one of the reasons that this is happening, and I know we shouldn't speculate here, but I just want to mention the reports, that they say that this could be happening because they did rush this product into production, and they also kept pushing forward on this idea of the fast charger, saying, hey, this battery is the most powerful that we've ever had. Is there a risk, in your opinion, in terms of being part of this smartphone race and just pushing too far, too fast, and these are going to be consequences that we may have to live with?
Most definitely. Samsung's official statement during the first recall was that there was a battery cell issue. Apparently, when it gets too hot, some cathodes that are misaligned, you know, may have the tendency to kind of blow up at really high temperatures. I've seen some videos on the internet. They've tried to recreate that scenario, but you really had to get the phone really, really hot. But I've also been thinking, you know, I have the iPhone 7 Plus, and I have the Note 7. The Note 7 has a big 3,500 milliamp hour battery. The iPhone 7 doesn't even have a 3,000; it's 2,900. So, and just in terms of battery size alone, the Note 7 wins. Although the Note 7 is smaller as a phone, so I don't know how they're able to fit a smaller, higher capacity battery. And then you have there's fast charging. The iPhone 7 takes almost 2 hours to charge, while the Note 7 can charge in just over an hour and 20 minutes. So all of these are possible factors. And you're right. You know, we're trying to push innovation. You don't really know how if we're pushing too hard. And right now there are consequences. And I don't want to speculate as well, but, you know, it's sad because, you know, there's a QA, issue here. They weren't able to test properly. There was a mistake somewhere down the line.
So
I don't want to start.
Just for Michael Bancroft, QA is quality assurance. He might have thought you meant that it was a Q&A between Samsung and its people.
Just so you know, people may be laughing, thinking, ha, 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 but she's dead serious because I actually did look at her and be like, QA, and I was about to say out loud, we're having a question and answer. It's so weird. That's how well she knows me. I'm like, what? What's going on? Michael, I'm just curious. If this happened to Apple, I wonder if it would be as severe because there's no other competition within their platform, whereas there's so many other Android devices. And I'm wondering, is that what the issue is? Because there's so many other options and other companies that could basically come in and take their market share.
I agree with Amber, you know, that this is really about pushing technology. And to be honest, at the pace that technology is you know, just happening, it could have happened to anyone. And it could have happened to Apple. And I think Samsung and Apple are unique because they kind of have a market and a loyal fan base that may or may not be swayed by incidents like this. I've spoken with friends who use the Note 5, and they were like, oh, if this didn't happen, you know, even after the first recall, I still would have wanted to buy a Note 7 regardless. Even if there's this fear that kind of, that it might still happen, they still wanted it. And here in the Philippines, of the phones that were sold, the majority of the people chose, because you can replace it or get a refund, a majority of those who bought phones chose to wait for the replacement. So I think Apple and Samsung are kind of unique, but definitely there are the Android smartphone market is a little bit more competitive in the sense that there are a lot of options out there. So, you know, someone who's really on the fence, not so sure, can, you know, say, okay, I'm not going to buy Samsung this year. I'll go with another brand. Huawei is reportedly coming up with the Note 7, quote-unquote, clone to be released later this month. And so there are a lot of phones out there, you know, waiting to pounce on this opportunity.
Absolutely. I think you bring up a really good point. Two quick things because we have to go. One is happy birthday. We know you just had a birthday.
Thank you.
And the second thing is for people who want to check out your phenomenal gadget reviews and all the content that you put out, where's the best place for them to go?
All you have to do is visit gadgetmatch.com and you can find all the stories and videos there.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Up next, the live streaming wars are heating up. We keep tabs on the showdown between Facebook and Twitter.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we're going to talk about live streaming wars. Of course, these are not real wars, but made-up wars in the digital space, because, of course, it is now possible to do a professional broadcast with Facebook Live that's been available for some time now. And just recently, Twitter announced Periscope Producer. This is a tool that has been used by big broadcasters and brands over the past 6 months, but they are now making it available to some people, and they will eventually make it available to the public. It's only available for iOS devices right now. You can request to potentially use the service if you want to get access to it, according to an article that I just read on fastcompany.com, and they will roll it out, like I said, to the public in not too long.
Android gets a bum rap again.
Android, I know. Yeah, just rolling out on iOS to start out with, but eventually Android. What do you guys think? I mean,
well, sorry. Before we go, I would like to say that I would love everybody, if you have an opportunity, to go and log on to Amber's social media feeds, because I already believe that you're a pioneer and we're well ahead of the curve with stuff like this, because you've done a lot of content with Facebook Live at a broadcast level, I believe, with switching and multi
cameras, and it's just as good as broadcasting, if not better. And so I find that interesting that you were kind of already doing it. So it's like you, out of everybody, would be more of an expert to talk on this, because it's kind of like done it. It's like been there, done that. These guys need to catch up to you.
Okay, so here's the thing. Yes, in some capacity, I guess I've been live streaming for many years now.
But also for the last few months, been doing it like with multicams, more professionally, and it's flawless, the content.
Yeah, so here's the thing. So Facebook Live does allow you to broadcast from a computer using software like Wirecast or OBS, so you can look like a real television program. The only issue is, and this is the thing that we've run into, and I think you're right. I mean, our broadcasts look really great.
Yeah.
Is that oftentimes there could be issues on twofold. One is your internet connection. So we found that tethering our phones is actually the best way to be able to get the most solid Wi-Fi. The second thing is we had something happen just yesterday on Facebook Live where in the middle of our broadcast, for some reason, the software switched the input. So instead of the input being our microphone, so the audio was really great, in the middle of the broadcast, it just switched automatically to the laptop microphone. I bring this up because we're still in early days.
So there are going to be glitches.
There's glitches, yes.
So, and it's not like a broadcast facility where you have multiple people there. There's multiple programs
and backups and
technology. So it could go awry at any moment.
So if you're getting into this space, I would just say that you'd be free and open in terms of experimenting and understand that there could be potential issues. But like Aaron said before we started the segment, this is pretty powerful technology that used to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And now it's basically free for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's a great development. I've seen hints of this coming through. I watched one of the Clinton-Trump presidential debates on Twitter. They broadcasted it there as a media outlet. I didn't have to go to broadcast TV or cable TV.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Why did you choose to watch it there?
First, out of curiosity, I never checked the Moments tab on Twitter, and then it came up there's even a banner not even on the Moments tab, so I tried it to see what it was like, and I also want to tweet during the debate, as everyone does, and I want to see how that worked, but tweeting during the debate stopped the live feed.
Did it make your was it a better experience for you as a viewer?
It was more...
Sorry, I'm so curious.
It was more portable. It was it was a bit more personal. I want to try it because I heard about this big Twitter and NFL deal to broadcast NFL games on Twitter, which, of course,
is
geo-blocked.
Did you hear that
here? It's, yes.
Sorry.
Well, also, when I log on to Twitter during NFL game nights, it is geo-blocked and not available in Canada. And I follow lots of American Twitterers, so I get to see how they react to it and not actually experience it. So when the debate was broadcast in Canada, I want to see what watching a live event on Twitter was like. But now putting these tools in regular people's hands, not just a big entity like the NFL, an important entity like a presidential debate, I think it's a really great development.
Amber, do you think that this is going to destroy broadcasters and the media industry further? Because now it's putting the ability in the hands of the mass.
I don't think it's going to destroy the media outlets. I just think they need to innovate quickly in order to survive. And some of them are, and some of them aren't. And I would say, just as someone who works in this space, like all of us do, I've always wanted to be on the right side of progress. So
you have always, if anybody follows your career, you really have been.
I've always been too early, actually.
You're like a too early adopter.
I'm like a too early adopter, where I should just be an early adopter. But I think it's a good point. I mean, I think the broadcasters need to learn how to innovate, because there is magic in this new technology because of the engagement, right? And I think that's the exciting part, whether it's Facebook Live or Periscope Producer, is when you can have that conversation that goes along with it, I think all of a sudden you get an engagement you just can't get on regular broadcast television.
So it's interesting. So with the Periscope Producer, so what it is actually allowing, for those people that don't know, it's allowing creators to generate a special URL that they can then stream to from a wide array of devices, and that including professional cameras, studio editing rigs, satellite trucks, desktop stream software, like you name it, it's there. So it really is, even potentially, which I thought was really fascinating, the potential for 360 cameras. Now that's an experience I'd be interested in, especially in a news situation if I was in war-torn countries.
Absolutely.
So as we know, or people out there may not know, Periscope is a Twitter product, and one of the best ways to find Periscope feeds or to find live feeds is on your Twitter stream. We've also talked a lot in the past few months about Twitter. Is it dying? Is it ending? The signups have plateaued. The numbers have plateaued. Is this a backdoor way to get people into Twitter and to get the Twitter numbers up?
Well, I think it's interesting. And I would also say, I mean, Twitter's my pretty much my go-to social network. And I say, I think that Twitter's kind of a utility now for news. We need it to rely on breaking news and all this information. So I think it's a way for possibly for Twitter through Periscope Producer to compete. Because if they have the potential for brands and broadcasters to pay for additional features or to get their feeds pushed up, it's another source of revenue. And right now it seems, and I think through our conversation with Tony Lacavera last week, we saw this, Twitter needs more revenue coming in, and that will help them survive in the long run. All right, so that ends this episode of The Feed. We could talk forever about this, but we have no more time. Remember, if you want to follow us, you can tweet us at Amber Mack and at MBancroft80, and please use the hashtag The Feed. And Aaron, where can people follow you?
At Aaron Papernick. That's with one A. That's my name.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on SiriusXM Canada Talks Channel 167.